Welcome to the Expert Network Team Podcast,
where our goal is to inform and educate our listeners on matters related to finance, legal, insurance, accounting, and other interests that are of personal and business nature.
We hope you will find our content useful as well as entertaining.
First, to quickly introduce the Expert Network Team, here's Carl Frank.
Thanks, Mike. My name is Carl Frank with A&I Financial Services. We work with a small number of successful families to help you grow and protect your investments and choose how you want to be taxed. Now let me introduce Jeff Kromendyk.
Thanks, Carl. Jeff Kromendyk with Security First Insurance Agency, where we exist to build long-term mutually beneficial relationships with business owners as well as household members in helping them transfer and manage their risk. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Mike Miller with Miller & Associates CPAs. We're a small firm specializing working with small businesses and individuals to help them become tax compliant and tax efficient and help them prepare and manage their financial statements accordingly so they understand how their business is being run. We try really hard to make sure that we put more money in people's pockets rather than in the government. Next up, Nate.
I'm Nathan Merrill. I am a founding partner of Goodspeed & Merrill. Goodspeed & Merrill is a law firm located in the Denver Tech Center, small business, full service oriented, as well as private client. My emphasis is on strategic tax planning, helping make sure people keep more of what they make so they can make more out of what they keep. Now I'll turn the time back over to Carl.
We hope you enjoy the information contained in today's podcast and find it useful. If you'd like to learn more or desire to meet with any of the Expert Network team members in person, you can contact us at info@expertnetworkteam.com. That's info@expertnetworkteam.com.
We encourage you to take advantage of a free consultation with any of our team members. Just mention this podcast when you schedule your appointment.
Now on to today's podcast.
Our topic today is the top financial move you'd make in the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Carl Frank, and I've got with me today Nathan Merrill and Jeff Kromendyk. Our partner, Mike Miller, is out today. Mike was diagnosed with having come in contact with somebody who has COVID-19, although he wasn't diagnosed with it himself. He's self-quarantining, and so this seems like a very timely topic given the circumstances for our own Expert Network team today. Let me provide some context about the COVID-19 pandemic. At the time we're recording this, the cases around the world are down. There are some hot spots, but generally speaking, it's not the height of the crisis that we experienced early this year. And the big worry at this point in time is whether or not it's going to come back. But our topic today is really more about financial moves and the economy, because there's no doubt that the COVID-19 caused a massive economic slowdown and big challenges for business owners. And sometimes a crisis like this presents an opportunity. So our goal today is to present some ideas to you that you might not have heard of before. And hopefully you can take advantage of, or at least learn a little bit more about, and maybe that'll lead into something that can help you and your business. So I'm just going to go ahead and begin with a question. Nate, what would be your top financial move to make today during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, and it's interesting because you may be familiar with the saying by Napoleon Hill, that in adversity is the seed of every opportunity, or something to that effect. And
how great is that?
Yeah, and I think this is a perfect example of where opportunities exist to explore strategies that can really help, especially business owners, is primarily my focus in a lot of the planning I do. Helping business owners prepare themselves for the next potential pandemic or crisis. And so the solution that I would propose, or propose as a top move for 2020 as a result of COVID, is evaluating, considering getting into a captive insurance arrangement.
What's that?
Yeah, captive insurance is a business risk management structure that functions as insurance, but instead of insuring your typical business risks like property damage or workers' comp and that sort of thing, you're insuring your business enterprise risk. And there's a lot of different ways to use captive insurance, but business enterprise risk would be things that have been definitely impacted during this COVID crisis, which is why it in particular comes to mind. Things like supply chain interruption. Think of all the contracts out there that are going to be affected, all the businesses that are going to be affected by different supply chain interruptions, whether it's meat packing or sourcing from China or any number of things.
It's a huge deal.
So there's that. There's loss of a supplier in addition to supply chain interruption. There's a workforce shortage, which some businesses are struggling with right now. There's things like uncollectible AR. When businesses start to fold and you have lots of AR out, you can insure those types of risk exposures.
Well, I can think about risks that if any of those things were to fall apart and I can't deliver, if I'm running a business where I need to deliver a product to a client and I can't do that, then my reputation's at risk.
It's almost a yes. And reputational risk is another big one, just protecting from all the various, you know, social media and various attack points on reputation, loss of licensure. But then it goes into things even like, you know, regulatory risk. You know, a lot of industries right now are facing heavier regulatory burdens. And that's one thing that when it comes to government, it always seems to be in a state of flux.
It does, doesn't it?
What?
So frustrating.
What are they going to regulate next?
I guess it's full employment for attorneys and CPAs.
Thankfully, yeah. So
we can buy an insurance policy for this? This is something different than buying insurance, isn't it?
It's buying insurance, but it's essentially buying insurance from yourself. The structure that I often relate it to that most business owners can understand is similar to how when your business matures, a lot of businesses tend to want to be their own landlords. They want to set up entities to acquire real estate so they can pay rent to themselves. And they are the landlord on the one hand, and they're the business, the tenant on the other. This is a lot the same in the sense that you set up an insurance company, and that insurance company is real insurance. There's risk distribution. There's risk shifting. Those things have to exist in order for it to be considered insurance and therefore a deductible expense. But it's real insurance, and you get to basically buy insurance from yourself. And the real advantage to this strategy is when that captive insurance company, your insurance company, receives that premium, it's not taxed upon receipt up to $2.4 million a year. And that's a lot of insurance coverage,
obviously.
Yeah, that's
great.
So the sweet spot for businesses that can really take advantage of this, it depends on a couple of things. Usually we look first to gross revenue, but there's a number of industries where gross revenue can be much lower because margins are much higher. So we're looking at gross revenue and net revenue in terms of actual net loss type of coverage. So some businesses we can start with gross revenue around 2 million, net revenue around 1, and there'll be some legitimate, especially if there's industry risks. A lot of those types of businesses for us are professional medical practices.
Uh-huh.
And so there's very legitimate licensure risks and reputational risks, especially in the area of medical malpractice. But then other businesses, it's typically 4 million net up and 10 million gross and up. So
fairly successful business, and they could set up their own insurance company and move money out of their first company into that company
on
a
pre-tax basis.
And it's a little bit like owning your own business.
It's just like owning another business, just like buying a real estate entity or having real estate entity set aside in a separate entity. This is very much the same thing. Now, most folks wouldn't be interested in going out and starting an insurance business. So just like with your 401k or other benefit programs you provide, these are usually managed by turnkey operations, what we call captive managers. And so there's costs involved in outsourcing that, but it takes the burden of actually trying to figure out how to run an insurance company off of what your primary focus is making money in your regular business.
And I could have used that money had I set up one of these plans years ago. I could have used that money during this crisis. I could be using it now.
In one of two ways, yes. So, if you had a claim, that obviously brings the money back into the business. It's just like any other insurance that way. You have a supply chain interruption that's adversely affecting your business. Now, it's not instantaneous. It's like any other insurance. You make a claim, you submit documentation, that sort of thing. But it can certainly help to restore the cash flow once it's gone. The other way to do it, which is more immediate, is when you have built up surplus over years and years and years of running a captive, and that surplus is available for distribution to owners. And if the owners are the same people as the owners of the business, there's a way to extract the cash out to make it available to maybe reinfuse in the business. But that's when you'll have the tax recognition event, is when you actually take the assets out of the captive. There's a lot of nuance there, but that's why, you know, when I look at the COVID crisis and this new normal or this new economy, COVID economy, having the opportunity to cover your business risks seems fairly significant, because we can't always count on the government to come in and fix it.
Boy, we could do a whole podcast just on that, couldn't we? And we might do one just on the loans and where they are every at this exact moment, but they're changing so quickly. It could be a podcast that's different every day.
Yeah.
So this would be a way that I could insure myself, get through a crisis like this. But even if I don't have a crisis, I might have a tax advantaged way to grow and protect my money.
Correct.
Sounds
and it takes
good.
It out of the business side of the, so if you have liability exposure on your business, this extracts assets that can't be looked to satisfy claims of your business. Again, going back to kind of medical professionals, they have a high exposure on their assets of their medical practices. If they can extract that out so it's bankruptcy remote, liability remote, you know, this is a way to do that.
It's such a great idea. And one of the things that we're going to talk about here in a minute with Jeff is, you know, I'm sure, Jeff, you've got some great ideas about insurance, but can I go ahead and just call it pandemic insurance?
I wouldn't object to that, but
it's not. There's no other way to get insurance for a pandemic, is there?
Probably not. Not at least at the level, you know, a lot of contracts even that we're looking at, we're typically familiar with like the force majeure provisions, the acts of God, and how they prevent performance under contract. No one ever contemplated acts of government that prevent your ability to perform on a contract. And so there's a lot of litigation coming up as to whether something like a pandemic, at least the government response to a pandemic, qualifies for force majeure.
I think there's a lot in that, what you just said, force majeure and force majority.
Yeah. So.
Well, very good. Thank you. What else should we know about this?
It's a fairly sophisticated solution. I wouldn't go into it thinking that this is it can be described as a fairly plug and play solution, but there's definitely a lot involved. There's a very substantial underwriting process. It's a legitimate thing. It's not just how much can I tuck away in my, you know, special account.
Right.
It's an actual transaction that has to be supported by business exigencies and business facts.
Are there specific business lines or professions that it does not apply to? Is there anybody who's excluded?
Yet. No. You know, almost any business has an enterprise risk. And I'll tell you where we're starting to see another unique application for the captive is in self-insured healthcare plans, using it as a kind of a hedge. Rather than going directly from self-insured to stopgap coverage, the captive can be overlaid in that arrangement so that your captive picks up some of the intermediate risk.
Right.
That has a lower probability and can lower your stopgap coverage on the back end. But I mean, self-insurance for health insurance it could be a podcast in and of itself.
It really
but
could.
But the captive is a solution that businesses that are surviving and anticipate thriving should definitely consider.
I really love it. Thank you so much for the information today, Nate. That was great.
Yeah, no worries.
And now I'd like to ask Jeff Cromedyke a few questions. Now, Jeff is our insurance expert here, the founder and principal at Security First Insurance. Jeff, in the coronavirus pandemic that's going on today, what would be your top financial move?
Yeah, just coming in on the heels of Nate here talking about captives. I mean, I think, you know, one of the initial waves of calls that we received back in March and also April was, you know, business income loss. And that's a, you know, again, something that we had to unfortunately communicate to all of our business owners that was not covered, primarily because it was not a direct or physical loss that occurred specifically to their business. And a pandemic or a, you know, virus such as this, you know, certainly was not deemed a direct or physical loss. And so that's where these captives really, you know, kind of come into play. They provide a much broader, you know, coverage form for some of these uninsurable risks from your traditional insurance policies. And loss of business income, or, you know, some of the other things that, Nate had specifically spoke about, you know, can certainly be considered in a captive environment. So I appreciate, you know, your information, Nate, on that, and hopefully that was helpful for our listeners as well. But I think the things that come to mind right now, if you're a business owner, you know, small business owner, and I would say smaller than, you know, probably the businesses that would qualify for a captive, you're really going to want to be keeping a close eye on really what your insurance is doing at this point in time. I think there's a couple key things to keep in mind. First of all, your general liability is always based on a rating basis, which usually consists of either gross sales or payroll. If you're a contractor, it could be subcontracted costs. And let's face it, our economy is down, and it's probably going to continue to decline. And so as a result, as business owners, our gross revenues as well as potentially payrolls and also subcontracted costs will potentially go down. And so we really, as insurance professionals, want to make sure that our clients are paying attention to that so we can make adjustments to the policies and then eventually reduce the premiums as a result. Workers' comp is also another thing to keep in mind. Obviously, with payrolls being down, maybe there's been some furloughs or some layoffs. Workers' comp is obviously based on payroll, annual payroll estimates. And so, again, another good thing just to take a look at, and certainly review those payroll limits so that, in essence, you can realize a reduction in premium if your payrolls have dropped. Couple of coverages that I just really want to kind of go into that I think have become very relevant as it relates to the pandemic that we're in and the economic downturn that we're in currently. You know, as of mid-March, I mean, most of us business owners were in the process of sending all of our staff home to work from home and getting them set up in a virtual work environment. And so it's no wonder and certainly obvious that that posed a an increased exposure with regards to keeping our data safe and keeping it in the right place and not allowing it to leak into hands that certainly it didn't belong in. And so when all of us went to home networks and began to use data, you know, really from a different workspace, our cyber liability exposures certainly went up. And so that's just something to consider, I think, as a business owner. Really should be considering cyber liability anyway and data privacy type coverages. But now that we're working virtually, working from you know, all kinds of different locations, specifically from home networks, cyber liability should be something you certainly want to be aware of and should look into. The other thing, couple coverage forms I just want to touch on is one is employment practices liability. There have been an immense amount of changes to our HR manuals over the last several months. We have also, as business owners, furloughed some people, laid off some of our staff potentially, and maybe even permanently terminated some employees. And so When we think of employment practices liability, we think about those claims that can come against us as business owners for wrongful termination, discrimination, harassment. We fielded a claim just a couple months ago on failure to promote. So these are, you know, sometimes appear to be pretty ridiculous claims in a lot of cases, but nonetheless, when they land on your desk, you have a responsibility to tend to them, and it's usually gonna mean that your next phone call is to your attorney, and so those things can begin to cost money and certainly ultimately lead to really a settlement out of court. I mean, these things don't typically go to a judge and a jury. So the question is not if I'm going to pay, it's how much I'm going to pay. And so employment practices liability is an important one when we've got unemployment as high as we do and unfortunately a lot of instability in our workforce. And then the final one I just want to mention is directors and officers coverage. Many of our corporations here in Colorado anyway, being small, tightly held companies, directors and officers coverage doesn't tend to be a real popular coverage for small business owners to have. But let's face it, every company has a board of directors. A lot of times it's just one person. Maybe it's the sole proprietor or the president, or maybe if it's a partnership, it's two individuals. But just important for our business owners to understand that we do have an exposure when we're making decisions on behalf of our employees or on behalf of even our vendors and customers. And so I think this has been a very difficult time for us as business owners. We're making difficult decisions that impact lives. We're all right now trying to determine how to bring our employees back. How to do it safely, how to do it in a way that is timely and certainly doesn't add to the fear and the anxiety that's already out there. And, you know, if we are found to have made some of these decisions irresponsibly, we could certainly be held liable for that. And then another big reason to have D&O coverage or directors and officers coverage is in the event you're in the midst of any type of a merger, acquisition, or sale. And we are seeing an uptick in some of that going on as well. So those are just some thoughts off the top of my head that this particular pandemic and this particular economy that we find ourselves in have brought to the forefront of our minds as we continue to serve our customers and our clients and kind of work our way through this season.
Jeff, thank you so much for the overview of insurance. That's very helpful, and it's a great idea for all business owners, regardless of the size of our business, to do right now. But I'm mostly interested right now in the cyber insurance and the risks we face with all of our employees logging in remotely and the chance that any one of them might have a virus on their computer that could take down our company or in other ways harm our businesses and our clients and our teams. Can you tell me a little bit more about cyber insurance?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, cyber liability is maybe a podcast in and of itself. We've done some seminars on that for our clients in the past, and it tends to be a pretty hot topic for sure. But cyber liability is a relatively new insurance form in the insurance world. It's probably 20, 25 years old at this point in time, which is actually relatively new compared to many of the forms. But, in essence, we as employers or even business owners have a responsibility to protect the raw data that's in our computer systems. And we owe that to our customers. We owe that to our employees. To protect, you know, their social security numbers, their driver's license numbers, even their names and just dates of birth or names and addresses or a name and a phone number. I mean, the combination of two of those pieces of information would be considered as private data here in the state of Colorado and many other states as well. And so in the event that is ever leaked or stolen or frozen, or even held ransom, this cyber liability form is designed to respond to those situations. And so it's not a property coverage. You'd think it would be because, you know, I'm protecting the intellectual property that I'm in control of, but it's actually a liability because you're in essence being held liable for the damage that's caused to third parties as a result of your negligence in protecting your data.
Thanks, Jeff. That was great. Now we're going to take a quick break to learn about one of our expert network team members. And on the other side, I'm going to present my best idea, the best financial move to make during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're taking a break from the program to introduce one of our expert team members. Mike, would you please tell us a little bit about Miller & Associates?
Sure. Thanks, Carl. Appreciate being here. Miller & Associates is a full-service accounting firm. We provide accounting work, tax preparation, tax planning, tax resolution, and business advisory services. Plus, we have a side payroll business that we offer. We're a staff of six, three of us working at home right now, three of us working in the office right now, but everything seems to be working out.
Mike, you know, we're clients of yours, and one of the things we love about you is the extra hand-holding you give us. And can you give us a little bit of our audience, a little bit of a feeling for what the value of the Expert Network team is for you, and what does it bring to your clients?
Well, one of our main focuses is, you know, tax compliance and tax efficiency. In working with financial statements and trying to maximize people's return on investment. So we don't want them overpaying on their taxes. And to do that, really, it's a well-prepared financial statement, correct? So we really want to make sure the books are done right, the financial statements are representative of the period, and from a comparative perspective, they're reflective year over year, period over period, depending on which time frame we're looking at. That leads to effective tax planning, which then, you know, to your point, when we're working together, we're sitting down going through the books, looking at it, going, wow, we're projecting X amount through the end of the year. What can we do with that money rather than giving it to the government and putting it in our own pocket? And planning for that so that at the end of the year, the tax return is just kind of a process as opposed to, you know, a surprise.
I love that. And as you know, one of our values is to go tax-free.
Yep.
It's a great goal. Well, Mike, thank you for that. What do you do outside of work?
You'll find me on the golf course, or you'll find me traveling with my wife, usually to some beach destination, where my wife likes to sit in the sun and I like to surf and boogie board. And if I'm not doing that, we're out hiking in the mountains somewhere.
You're being a little modest. Tell me a little bit about your marathon runs, too.
Oh, well, we're trying to hit a half marathon in every state. We're at 29 right now. We were scheduled to be done with 50 states by the end of 2021, but COVID kind of put a damper on that. We don't expect to run any races this year. And we're trying to hit 100 half marathons by the end of 2022.
I love that, Mike. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
So we're rejoining you live here. This is Nathan Merrill, and again, we're talking about our number one ideas for the 2020 COVID era. And now that we've heard from myself and Jeff, we're going to turn to Carl. Carl, for your number one idea in the 2020 COVID era, financial decision.
Thanks, Nate. You guys brought up some great ideas, and it got my juices flowing in a lot of different ways. But to focus on one idea that everybody can implement, regardless of the size of your company, whether large or smaller, and regardless of your situation, I think you should think about ways to go tax-free. And one of the best ways to do that is to
move to Bermuda.
Move to Bermuda might be a better idea.
Just kidding.
But I actually happen to love it here in Colorado, so I want to stay in Colorado. And one way I can stay in Colorado and still be almost as tax-free as if I didn't live in the U.S. would be to do the Roth IRA or the Roth 401k. And I could convert money from a tax-deferred IRA or a tax-deferred 401k to the Roth and never pay taxes on that again. And I think that's a great idea for people to be considering right now in today's environment. Perhaps your investments are down from where they were before, and you're still positive on these investments. You still want to hold them for the long haul. If you convert them at a lower price than what they were in the past and what they may be in the future, all those gains that you get once it's in the Roth are tax-free.
So I'm going to interrupt you real quick here, and 'cause being a tax attorney, I know that people never understand what we're talking about when we talk, when we distill these big ideas down into a term called a Roth conversion.
Right.
What is a Roth conversion?
You're taking a 401k or an IRA that's tax deferred. When you put money into the IRA, you either got a tax deduction for it, or in your 401k, you put in pre-tax dollars and you hadn't paid your income tax on that money yet. You're going to take whatever that money is that's in your deferred IRA or your deferred 401k, and you're going to convert it into a Roth. You're going to set up a new Roth account or an existing Roth account, and you're going to transfer the dollars from the tax-deferred account into the Roth. When taxes are due the next year, when you pay your 2020 tax bill, you're going to have an income tax bill due on all the dollars you converted.
So a couple of reasons why you would do that. I mean, aside from, like you say, the long-term exclusion of any gains or income that comes out of that because you're taxing it now, putting it away, as opposed to the inverse, which most people do, which is don't tax me now, tax me later. Would one reason to do that, or number one reason, you gave the number one reason, which is to avoid the tax on the income later. But
yeah, you're never taxed again.
You know, I hear this all the time now, is tax rates will never be this low again, presumably. So this is that another reason why this is a good environment to do that?
I think that if you believe that taxes are going to be higher in the future, it's a great idea to pay your income taxes today at a lower rate. And whether that happens or not is a matter of debate. I'm of the opinion that they're likely to go higher and not go lower. And so I think that you're in good company if you do think that taxes
Well, and even
go
if
up.
They stayed the same, you're just eliminating all that gain from tax in the long term anyway.
An absolute truth is tax deferred is tax compounded, or you haven't grown your money.
Right.
That has to be the same. Maybe you say your tax rate was the same, and it's a 20% tax rate, but you take your $100 and you turn it into $200, you've taken your tax bill from $20 and turned it into $40, right? That's an absolute truth. Now, if you think your tax rate's going to be higher and it's going to go from a 20% rate to a 25% rate, that could be a really big dollar difference. On that same example, that would be a $20 tax bill today on the Roth conversion versus a 25% times $200 would be a $50 tax bill due in the future. So, yeah, it could make a big...
Larger principal amount as well.
Larger principal, more money in your pocket. It's a good thing to do, to think about going tax-free.
Okay, and I had another question here, but I think I lost it. So we're excluding future gains from tax. We're doing it now because tax rates will never be this low again.
Well, I think another idea that could happen, and this has been the case in the past, and it could be the case in the future too, that as we age, we lose tax deductions. This is the way the past has been, and it's the way the future might be as well. Think about the biggest tax deduction a lot of Americans have today. It's the mortgage interest that we pay on our homes, and you can still deduct it today. It's been on the chopping block for years. It's never been eliminated. We can still deduct the interest we pay on our
primary. It was reduced a little bit this last time, but yeah.
Right? You can still deduct it.
Yep.
So as we age, when we pay off the mortgage, we're losing that tax deduction. Kind of a bummer. And there are other taxes that we pay when we get into retirement that we hadn't maybe thought about before, like our Social Security income tax. Social Security income can actually be taxed.
Right.
And for a large number, especially for business owners, it is taxed. So as we age, we lose tax deductions. So it's another reason to think about finding ways to get your money tax-free. If you don't do anything else, then think about getting some of your money tax-free. Maybe you've hedged the tax stress.
Right.
If a third of your money is tax-free in a Roth or another life insurance cash value, other ways to go tax-free. If some of it's tax deferred in your traditional 401k or your IRA, then you've hedged your risk there. And if some of it is your standard brokerage or checking account, and that's a taxed as earned type of vehicle, you've hedged your risk. Whether they lower or raise taxes in the future, some of your money's going to win.
So I remembered my other question.
Yes.
This sounds like a time-based strategy. So is there a time in life that is best suited to do this? You know, I know that young people are often encouraged just to skip the whole 401k thing, go straight to a Roth 401k or a Roth. Where's the toggle point where you kind of need enough time to make up the difference between paying the tax now and...
Yeah, I absolutely love that question. And your individual situation is unique to you, and you should talk to a great financial advisor and an expert for your situation. But as a general rule, the more time you have, the more time you're going to benefit, the more dollars you're going to benefit by having money tax-free. doubt.
So being, let's say you're a young professional, 45 to 50, it's not too late.
Definitely
and you,
not too
in
late.
Fact, you may be in the sweet spot.
It's a
but
great
like you
time
say,
to do
every
it.
Situation's individual. But I just trying to help people see where they fit into this picture. You could be in your 50s and you may still have enough time to depending on the size of the account, the whatever your
you
current income.
You may be
income.
Significantly older than that and still want to do it because if your kids are going to inherit that money, maybe you'd prefer them to inherit a tax-free Roth instead of an account where they're going to have to pay their income tax on it when they inherit it.
Now, even though I'm a tax attorney, I can't say I've committed the entire code to memory. Under the SECURE Act, there were some revisions. Did the revisions impact Roth IRAs as well?
Oh, it's a terrible revision. Yeah, it used to be. It used to be, and it's no longer the case, that your kids could inherit that Roth and
stretch it
out over their lifetime, and then the grandkids could inherit it and stretch it out over their lifetime. Can't do it anymore. It really stinks. So now it's only 10 years.
So they're forced to take it out. So all the retirement accounts are now forced to that 10-year rule
if
it's not a spouse.
Rule. Exactly right. But at least they would inherit a tax-free account for those 10 years.
Right.
And that's a big difference.
You're just, whether you intended them to get access to it or not, I mean, this is where trust ownership of, I mean, that's just a whole different podcast probably is.
Yeah, that'd be a great podcast.
How you isolate those assets from being just dissipated in a G2 situation, but that's very fair.
And the SECURE Act changed the rules for trusts, so we could possibly do a podcast just on that because some of the see-through trusts that existed before this might not work.
Well, they don't anymore.
Right?
So the stretch provisions that we used to count on, allowing a beneficiary to treat the IRA through a trust as their own and stretch it out during their life, spouses is still pretty much untouched as I understand it. But when you're talking about a stretch, you can only stretch now to a maximum of 10, and that doesn't mean it has to be pro rata over 10. It just has to come out by year 10, which means, especially if it's not a Roth, you're forcing all that income out into a trust environment over a much shorter period of time, which wasn't the idea in the first place.
Exactly. So that could be a real reason to talk to an expert team and make sure that you've got all these pieces, parts working together. You don't want to be caught up with something like that.
Yeah, you know, I know we had reserved time to go over our second best ideas, but I think we've taken up ample time here for our readers to or listeners, not readers, listeners to digest all this. Maybe we'll come back with another episode where we hit on kind of the fallback positions.
I think that'd be
other
great.
Things that we should consider.
Especially when Mike is back, because I think he's going to survive COVID-19. What do you guys think?
We'll give him the pole position on that one.
You'll be just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mike can take the lead on it.
All right. I think that'll wrap this session. Thanks to everybody for listening.
Pleasure to talk to everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us today. Hope you enjoyed the information we shared.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to share it with someone else. And join us next time.
If you want to meet with a member of the team, please contact us at info@expertnetworkteam.com. That's info@expertnetworkteam.com.
If you have special topics you'd like to hear about, please reach out to us and let us know at the same email address. Again, that's info@expertnetworkteam.com. Thank you for joining us and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We want to remind you that listening to this podcast does not establish a client-professional relationship with any of the firms represented, nor does it constitute legal, investment, or accounting advice, and the views are those of the professionals only.
Investment advisory services may be provided through ANI Financial Services, and securities may be provided through Genios Wealth Management.